We reached the climax. Finally, Yosef HaTzadik, he reveals himself to his brothers. They're coming down to Mitzrayim again. So the famous words we hear from Yosef, Yehuda comes to him and complains, oh, how can you do this to us, and what's going to be with our poor father. He goes through the whole story. Finally, Yosef says, he can't hold it back anymore, lo yachol litapek, and he says, reveals himself, says, Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, he says, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And then the pasuk continues, and they couldn't answer him, lo yachol nosoto, ki nifalu mipanav. They were so shocked, they couldn't answer him. So there's a medrash on this week's parsha. Abba Kohen Bartola said, Oy lanu miyom adin, Oy lanu miyom atochecha. He says, woe to us the day of din, and woe to us the day of judge of tochecha, of rebuke. Why? Yosef, ktanam shel shvatim haya. Yosef was one of the youngest of the shvatim. Velo hayu acham v'yecholim lamod b'tochachto. And yet, as we see, his brothers, even though he was one of the youngest ones, they couldn't stand in face of his rebuke. As it says, "V'lo yachlu lanotzoso," they couldn't answer him. They were shocked, and he was the youngest of the shvatim. Because she avoh Hakadosh Baruch Hu v'yochiach l'chol echad v'echad l'fi mashehu alachascham v'kama. So in the future, when Hakadosh Baruch Hu will come and give each and every one of his rebuke l'fi mashehu, according to him, all the more so is it woe to us. So there's a very famous Beis Halevi I'd like to share with you on this medrash. He asks basically three questions and answers it with a question. His questions are as follows. The main question is, he says, where is the rebuke? What's the rebuke? All Yosef said was, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, that's it. Those are his all his old, where's the rebuke? I could see if he would have told them, hey, I'm Yosef now, look, why did you do this to me? Why did you nothing. He just says, I'm Yosef, my father's still alive. That's it. So where's this tremendous rebuke that we're making a kal v'chomer that, oh, woe to us to the Yom HaDin. Second question he asks is that the order is a little bit funny, right? We have Oy lanu miyom HaDin and Oy lanu miyom HaTochecha. So what, l'chor, should be the opposite. What comes first? First, pashtas will be rebuked. Why did you do this? Why did you do this? This, this, and this. Hashem will give us rebuke. And then afterwards, he'll say, now that I told you off and so showed you what you did wrong, now comes the din. And now, because of that, you deserve din X, Y, or Z. Right? But yet it says the opposite. Woe to us the day of judgment, and then only after that, woe to us the day of rebuke, of tochecha. L'chor, it should be the opposite. And lastly, he says, what's the lashon over there that in the end, Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us rebuke, each person, lefi mashahu, according to him. What does that mean, lefi mashahu? So I said, he answers with another question. He says, why did Yosef ask, or have to ask, his brothers, the question of, is my father still alive? Why did he have to ask them that? He's heard time and time again from the brothers that their father is still alive. Every time they came, they said, they mentioned about their father, and now, last time, Yehuda was saying, oh, my poor father, it's what's going to be if I don't bring back Binyamin, then he's so connected to him, right, Shurab and Nafsho, he's going to die if he finds out that Binyamin doesn't come back, etc. He constantly spoke about the father. And so, well, why is Yosef again asking, my father's still alive? He heard a million times the father's still alive. Unless you say what? Well, maybe he thought they were lying, but now that he's, really telling him, I'm Yosef, maybe he's not going to lie anymore. That doesn't hold water either, because if it's not really true, the father's really dead, then why did Yehuda, now, at the beginning of this week's Parsha, he says, no, don't take Binyamin, I'll be your slave, and just let Binyamin go. Why? What's the difference? Elamai Lechur was true. The father really was alive, and he knew he had to come back, that he had to send Binyamin back, or he's going to be in big trouble. So it would make sense that Yosef believed him, that the father was still alive. So why did he have to ask them? And what's more, he says, they didn't answer him. Right? No, to be high. And then they didn't, the sukkim continue. It doesn't say, they said, yes, he's still alive. We don't see anywhere he answered them. So question, why did he ask them? And number two, why didn't they answer? So to answer these questions, he says the following. He says that if a person wants to give rebuke to his fellow man, he says the best way to do it is indirectly. Right? If you come up to the person, tell him, look him straight in the eye and says, you did such and such a thing. Why did you do this? So he says, human nature is what? You get defensive. And you say, no, it's, well, it wasn't me, or even if it was me, that's not what I meant, and I had different kavanas. And I mean, you get on the defensive, and you come up with all kinds of rationalizations why it's not, and you explain it out that it's not, you didn't do anything wrong. That's human nature. So if you're going to directly castigate the person, very often you're not going to get the results you want. Again, your results you want is that the person, you know, will change his ways. He did something wrong. He should learn from his mistakes. So what's the best way to do so? Is to take the person out of the framework of what really, you know, went on and put him out of the picture and let him look at something else and that he's not personally involved with. That's called negiyas, right? He's not nogeya de badavar. He doesn't have this personal bias. Looking at something else from an outsider's view, so he's not in the picture, so he looks at things much more objectively. And I think that this is one of the things what the idea of mashalim are all about, right? We see all the time, everything mashal, like besides the monkey midubno, but all the time, mashal l'man davar domer. What is this, a mashal life? Like a king who and his servants, and constantly Yiddishkeit is full of mashalim. Why? What's the big deal of mashalim? You say, well, it helps you understand. You know, but it's more than that, because you know, a lot of times the mashal is really the exact same thing, just put in a mashal. But the idea is if you're reading the thing directly, so then you say, hey, you know, you feel it's talking to you, and then you tend to not learn the lesson, because I'm personally involved, no, this can't be me, I don't do things like that. But if you look at it on a mashal, so then it's a king and his servants, and then you're looking at it from an outsider's viewpoint, and then you can say, yeah, that's not right, what he did, whatever, you're not personally involved. And then, once you realize that, then you can bring it back to yourself and learn the lesson. The classical example we see in Tanakh is with David HaMelech. Right after he lived with Bathsheba, so Nathan HaNavi came to give him Musar. So what did he do? He mamish used this technique. He didn't come up to David and say, David, how could you do this? How could you take Bathsheba? No, because again, that's not the ideal way to do it. You take him out of the picture. So what did he do? He comes to David and he says, David, I want to tell you a maisa that happened. I want you to let me know what you think of the, you know. So he says, okay, sure, go ahead. So he says, well, there's this very rich man, and there is this very poor man. He says, the rich man had lots of wealth and animals and things. The poor man, he had nothing. All he had is one little lamb. And that was it. And from that, the whole mishpacha had parnasa from. It gave milk, it gave them, that's what they lived off of, and the wool for their clothing, the youth. That's it, there's one little lamb. He says, one day, this rich person had a visitor come to him, and he needed wanted to serve some nice lamb chops. So what did he do? He looked at his neighbor, the poor man, he says, ah, a lamb. He went over to this poor man, and he took his lamb, and he brought it home, and he shechted it, and he made delicious lamb chops and served it to his visitor. So what do you say, David? What do you think about this guy? So David says, he was a poor. He says, what? He took this poor guy's only source of, that's his only lamb, and he took it away from him. He says, how could he do that? A chutzpah. And he says, Ben Mavis, the Lashon uses, Ben Mavis, this guy deserves to be killed. Haosha, somebody who does something like this. And Aisha says those. So then, Nathan turns to David again and says, you're this person. He says, what? He says, yeah, it was a mashal, and now let's put, you know, put the nimshal, right? Who is the rich man? That's you. Who is the poor man? That's Uriah, right? And the lamb is his wife, his only wife, Bathsheba. And you took his wife, right? That's the rich man taking the poor man's only lamb, okay, and took it away from him, and you took away Bathsheba from Uriah. So, you know, David was like, you know, shocked. So that's the idea. If he would have just come straight and told him, he wouldn't, again, get defensive, etc., like we said. So therefore, he took him out of the framework of the actual Musar, gave him a story to look at. He's not involved, some other person, and his lamb, and it's had nothing to do with him, he thought. And said he could look at it objectively. But once he looked objectively, and he saw how terrible things, then he said, you know, that's what you did. And then that Musar really hit home. So too, over here. This was the Musar that Yosef gave, right? He had, here's Yehuda, and he was saying what? Oh, you're such a bad person, right? He was approaching, not knowing it was Yosef. He said, how can you do this terrible thing, terrible avla, right? Our poor father back at home. And, you know, his youngest son, Binyamin, she loves so much. He already lost one son. And now here's his second son, you know, from his favorite wife, from Rachel. And his youngest, Ben Zakuni. And what's going to happen? If he's not going to come back, you'll kill him. You'll kill our poor father. Where's your, you have no heart, etc., etc., etc. So, what did Yosef say? He says, Ani Yosef, ha'odav yichai, meaning, he wasn't looking for, we asked, he didn't get an answer, and he knew the father was dead. Of course he knew the father was dead. What he was asking, when he says, ha'odav yichai, could it really be that our father's still alive? In other words, when it came to me, no, then you don't care, right? You didn't care about our poor father when you sold me for 22 years. I was away from my father. That didn't bother you, right? That, your father will be okay when it comes to me. That you sold without any problem, you know, got rid of me, and that was okay, right? Only now, when you're looking at it at somebody else, oh, it's a terrible thing. So he pointed out, there's the Musa, right? As long as they look at some other guy, this ruler in Egypt, what a wicked person he was, right? He doesn't care about their father. Right? Because they looked at it from outsider's opinion. Look at this bad guy, right? But Yosef pointed out, he goes, you're no better. You're pointing at me as the ruler, this wicked ruler doesn't care about your father. You yourself didn't care about your father. Haraya, how could he have sold me if you cared so much about your father? How to be chai, is our father still alive? He should be long ago dead from the tsars that you caused him. So you can see, because again, he pointed out to them, when you look at another person, right, that he did this bad, that bad, or whatever. But really, you're doing the same thing. Just so you can see it clearer, though, on other people. You don't see it in yourself. But you did the exact same thing. And therefore, he says, that answers the questions. Where is the tochacha? And that itself is the greatest tochacha. Right? When he told them this idea, he says, you yourself, paskin your din. Right? You yourself said this wicked person, whatever. That's you. You're this wicked person. You did the exact same thing. You also didn't care about our father. It's like I, as the ruler, didn't care about your father, Kilu. You also didn't. And now, we can also understand, Oy lanu miyom adin, Oy lanu miyom atochecha. So what is it? It's out of order, right? It should have been first the rebuke and then the din. It says, no, because why? First comes the din, because that's what it's going to be like in the next world. That we are going to paskin our own din first, right? And then comes the, then Hashem's going to give the rebuke. Why? In other words, because we did ourselves, and we looked at other people, oh, how could he have done this? How could this person, why is this guy so this, and this person so that? And we're dunning other people, that's going to come first. And then Sam's going to say, very nice, you thought this person was like that, and this person was like that, you were like this, and you were like that. And that's from the tochacha. So first comes the din, Hashem's going to show how we gave din on other people, and he's going to point our fingers back at you. That's because you looked at it from an outsider. You did the exact same thing. He's going to point the finger back at us. And that's the Lefi Mashahu, as we asked. If Hashem's going to dun everybody, Lefi Mashahu means exactly according to the way he paskin the guard on others. How he looked at others, Hashem's going to say, yeah, you did the exact same thing. That's what the Beis Halevi says. So I want to take it a step further. And it's more than that. That how we judge others, and Hashem say, you did the same thing. But it's more than that. There's a tremendous word from Rav Valbish Shlita, and he brings down this concept. He calls it the Panas Kesem. Panas Kesem is loosely translated as a slide projector. He calls this his slide projector theory. What is that? He said, I don't know if you're familiar so much. When I was a kid, we used to have slide projectors. Take slides, take pictures with your camera, and develop his slides, these little square things, and you put it in a projector, you put it upside down, and then you have a screen, you put it in the projector, and it reflects the image, you know, the picture on the screen. So he says that this is how a person, this is the way people work, human nature. What? He says a person's only, his personal lackings, the way it is, the person takes them, flips them around, and projects them on the other person. Now, what the person himself is lacking in, again, he doesn't want to admit to himself, he doesn't see it on himself like that, again, because we said he's biased. So he doesn't see his own shortcomings himself, but he takes them subconsciously, and flips them around, and he sees them in other people. Just like we said, the basis of Mamash, like we said over here with Yosef and his brother, right? Oh, look at this cruel person, doesn't care about our father. They were cruel. They didn't care about their father, right, that they sold Yosef. But what? They took these shortcomings, and they projected it. He doesn't. He says, that's human nature. Yomamas brings it out. It's a clear Rashi in the beginning of a Sechah Zvarim. There, Rosh Rabbeinu is recalling the sins of Klal Yisrael, including the Meraglim, and he says that you complained and you said, "B'sinas Hashem osanu hotzianu meretz Mitzrayim," right? Because of God, you hate us, God. That's why you took us out of Mitzrayim. So Rashi points out. Rashi says these are the words, "B'hu ayah ohev etchem." Really, that's not true. Hashem didn't hate you. Hashem really loved you. Aval atem sonim oso. But you hated him. You hated God. This is Mamash, this idea. In other words, they really hated God. So how did they? But they projected it on Hashem. It says, Hashem, you hate us. That's why you took us out of Mitzrayim. Exactly this idea. They really hated God, but they flipped it around and said Hashem hated them. So he says that, interesting, this is a tremendous tool, he says, therefore, for our own personal growth. Right, because we all want to grow. We all want to fix up our shortcomings that we have, our midos, bad midos. But the first step in fixing them up, of course, is to see what's wrong. Right? What am I doing wrong? Where am I lacking? So he says it's a tremendous tool. Why? Since a person works this way, again, subconsciously. So therefore, you can see what bothers you about other people. And that's a siman, that's a sign that these things are lacking in you. In other words, you're I don't know, you look at a person, everybody, you know, you see a person, and you say, oh, this guy's so whatever, yeah, he's got no patience, this person. You know, I'll be jumping around, no patience. So if you feel yourself feeling that way about somebody, that's a sign that you probably lack patience to some degree. Or, look at this person, always getting angry, this guy. You know, always losing his temper. It bothers you, this guy's always losing their temper. It's a siman, again, that you're flipping what you're lacking, as you probably have this bad meat of getting angry, and you're projecting it and seeing it in this other person. That's exactly this idea. So therefore, it's not just, you know, whatever, there is an idea that how we judge others, Hashem's going to judge us. That's true, and therefore, you know, they judged, you know, Yosef a certain way, and then it says, oh yeah, but it's more than that. It really is. What the way you're looking at others is really your shortcomings. Because that's Mamash Revolves Vor. That's how it works. But with the bad things you see in people are really your own, and this you're reflecting it and you see it in others. So another idea, perhaps, of this rebuke that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell us, that each one, it says the Midrash, Lefi Mashahu, according to who he is. What's that idea? So there's a tremendous war for Moshe Feinstein. It says that by Moshe and Aaron, in the Sefer Shmos, it says one place in the Pasuk, one Pasuk says Moshe's name is mentioned before Aaron, and another Pasuk says Aaron's name before Moshe. So it's coming to teach us, tell us Chazal, Rashi, bring it down to Shkuli, mate, that they're equal, right? Moshe, Aaron, Moshe, because they were equal. So Moshe asks, he says, what's Pshat? The equal. No, it can't be they're equal. We know Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest. Well, come, Nabi Yisrael, come a Moshe, right? Nobody's greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. So how could Chazal tell us that Aaron and Moshe were equal? Doesn't make sense. So he answers with the following Gemara. It says there was once an Amora, Rav Yosef, and his son was hovering from life and death. And he saw he was in like a coma or whatever. And eventually his son came to. And his father asked him, Ma Raisa, what did you see? And he saw that he was like probably half in the next world already. And so he wanted to know, did you, he was clinically dead, I don't know. So he said, what did you see? Did you see anything in the next world? So he says, yeah, Abba. He says, Olam hafuch Raisi. He says, I can't believe what I saw. I saw mamash an upside down world. He said, Elyonim lamata, v'tachtonim lamala. I saw great people that were very low in the next world, and low people which were very great in the next world. So his father answered him, don't worry, son. He said, Olam Barurita, you saw a clear world. No, there's nothing, that's exactly the way it's going to be, the way it is. So Rav Moshe wanted to understand, what's Pshat in the Gemara over here? So the simple pshat is that what? That he saw these people that were in this world, fancy, rich, you know, movie stars or whatever, these Elyonim. When it came to the next world, he saw they were nothing. And they, you know, they're down low in the next world. And people that were here, you know, the simple, you know, tzaddik, you know, quiet, humble person, you know, in his little hut, that he in the next world had a great chelek. That's what he saw, right? An upside down world. But he said, that's difficult, because then what was the son so surprised about? Oh, I saw an upside down world, I can't believe it. What's so unbelievable? Well, isn't that obvious? That you know, who doesn't go, you don't get a chelek in Olam Haba, depending on how rich and famous you are. So it's obvious. So why was the Ben so mispiral, so like, wow? So Rav Moshe says a tremendous chiddush. He says, that's not what he meant. What the son was saying was, I saw people that in this world looked like tzaddikim. They were elyonim. They looked like tzaddikim in this world. I thought they were tzaddikim. But then in the next world, I saw they had a very, very little chelek at Olam Haba. And I saw people here which I didn't look to me like they're tzaddikim in any way. And in the next world, I saw they had these great chelek at Olam Haba. And that's why the band was mispalled, because I can't believe it. Upside down world doesn't make sense. How could these tzaddikim have a little chelek at Olam Haba and a simple person have a great chelek? The answer was, no, he says, don't worry, son, that's the way it is. What's pshat? He says that every person is judged as an individual. In other words, the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives every person his capabilities, talents, right, that is for him. And all the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from every one of us is that we just make the best and the utmost of what we are given. Right? Hashem is not expecting us to be any more than we can be, but he expects us to be the maximum that we could be. And therefore he says, that's the pshat over here. Moshe and Aaron, we said, hey, Moshe was greater than Aaron. How can you tell me they're equal? They were equal, in other words, in Olam Haba, they're going to get the same chelek. Why? Moshe was greater. Of course Moshe was greater, but he maximized his potential. Aaron maximized his potential. So in Olam Haba, they're the same. Right? In this world, of course, Moshe was greater. But Lemaisa, Aaron was the most he could possibly be. And Moshe was the most he could possibly be. And that's all Hashem asked from us. And therefore, they're equal in Olam Haba. And therefore, he says, when you see us, he saw people down here which looked like tzaddikim, but you never know what's going to be in the next world. Because maybe they could have been five times even greater tzaddikim than they were here. Only Hashem knows that. Maybe they didn't maximize their potential. Hashem gave them so much potential to be unbelievable, gedol yador, they were just a simple rabbi or whatever. So to the onlooker, well, okay, you know, look, a rabbi, he learns, but this guy could have been the gedol yador. Hashem knows that. And therefore, he's not going to get a great chelek. This other person, which didn't mount any great feats over here in Torah, it looks like. But Lamaisa, if he did his utmost that he possibly could, so he's going to be up there with Moshe Rabbeinu. That's all Hashem expects from him. So a cute words from I think it was Rav Zusha used to say. He used to say, you know, he says, I'm not scared in the next world that Hashem's going to ask me, how come you weren't the Rambam, Rav Zusha? How come you weren't like Rabbi Akiva? How come you weren't like the Ritva, the Rashba? He says, that's not what I'm worried about. He says, I'm worried about that in the next world they're going to say, Rav Zusha, how come you weren't Rav Zusha? That's what I'm going to be worried about. Right? I don't have to, be like the Rambam. I have to be the most I could be. He said, that's what my son worried about. Right? Am I going to be really the most I could be? That Hashem asked from us. There's a story that Rav Isaac Sher once called in Rav Shalom Shvadran, that's all. And he said, come here, Rav Shalom, I want to show you something. He takes him to the window, and he says, I want to show you the base of Kfara, cemetery. So Shalom gets up, he says, cemetery? He knows the cemetery is far away from the city. Cemetery? So he takes him to the window, and he says, look out there, Rav Shalom. He looks out, he doesn't see any cemetery. So he says, you see that guy over there? He points to the person. He says, over there is buried a Rosh Yeshiva. He says, buried Rosh Yeshiva? He says, yeah. He says, see this guy? He's a professor. Right? This guy had unbelievable amount of talent and these brains, right, and leadership qualities, right? He could have been a Rosh Yeshiva. But instead, he decided to go to college and this and that, and he became a professor. Right? So in this person is buried a Rosh Yeshiva. Right? He could have been a Rosh Yeshiva. Instead, what is he? He's a professor. He pointed to another person. You see that guy? He says, buried there is a Mashkiach. You see, he was a person that was emotional, and he's a person that's emotional and has tremendous, you know, talents, artistic talents or whatever. And he could have brought them out, have been a great Mashkiach. the what. Instead, his parents sent him to school to be an artist, and he became an artist, right? Buried there is a mashkiach. He could have been a mashkiach. And these people, the next world, right, that's what's going to happen. They're going to show them, you know, you should have been a Rosh Hashiva. You should have been a mashkiach. You should have been this. You should have been that. You could have been. You had all this potential, and you didn't use it for the proper thing. Reminds me of a mice I read once, says that in Europe, there was a boy that grew up, and he had tremendous, tremendous artistic talents. Right? He was drawing and painting, unbelievable. Almost whatever he drew looked real to life. So the people, the professor, whatever, teachers, you know, approached the parents and said, you know, you should really send your kid to art school and to develop his talents because he's unbelievable. Just, you know, without learning, he give him the proper teachers, he can be the next Leonardo da Vinci. So his parents said, nothing doing. Our son, only Torah. Only Torah. He said, come on, it's a waste. He's so talented. I said, Torah, and that's it. And they kept their son in yeshiva. And then the end of the story is, and this boy ended up being the stipler, Rav. Right? So he's the stipler, right? He apparently would have sent an art, he would have been a great artist, but he would have lost the stipler. Right? So that's the idea. The person has tremendous potential. You have to take it and use it in the right way. There's a famous story with the Netziv Mivolozhin. Just a little bit different versions of the story. Basically, he was in the yeshiva, and he wasn't known to be the greatest of the Talmidim. I like to fool around, this and that. And one day, his parents were talking to each other, and they were discussing what's going to be the future of their young son. And they said, you know, I don't see a future in him in learning yeshiva. He hasn't gotten it. So I think the father said that I want to send him to trade school. Let him learn to be a shoemaker. You know, he's good with his hands. And not everybody can be a Gadol Hador. You know, you have to know who you're dealing with. And our son's not into learning so much. So I think I'll send him to become a shoemaker. So the mother agreed or whatever. They didn't realize that Rav Naftali, right, their little Naftali was listening in on the conversation of his parents. So he comes running out. And he says, no, Abba, please, 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 I promise I'll learn well. Let me stay in yeshiva. I promise I'll learn really well. I'll learn really well. So his father said, you're sure? He goes, yes, yes, I promise, I promise, I promise. Give me another one last chance. I don't want to be a shoemaker. I want to stay in yeshiva. So he says, okay, no, if you promise, okay. So he sent him back to yeshiva. And he grew up to be Rav Naftali Tzvi Berlin, the Netziv, Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin. So he recalled when he was he has a set, it's called the Hemek Davar. You might have heard of it, famous parish on Chumash that he wrote. So when they had like a party or whatever, celebrating, you know, the publishing of his book. So he mentioned this Maisa that he remembers when he was a kid that this had happened. And he says, you know what, after 120 years, what's going to happen? If I would have just gone to become a shoemaker, I would have come after 120 years in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he would have pulled out his set of five svarim, the Hemek Davar, and he would have showed it to me, and I would have looked at it and say, what's this? And Hashem would have said, this is the Hemek Davar, your Hemek Davar. My Hemek Davar? I don't know Hemek Davar. I can hardly read a pasuk in Chumash, Hemek Davar. I could write a parish. I guess, yes. Hashem said, you could have written this, the Hemek Davar. If you would have put your mind to it, you could. That's what Hashem would have told me. And I would have looked at him, how could that be? He said, yes, you just didn't make full use of your potential. You could have published this book. You could have put out this. You could have done this. He said, that's what Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to show us after 120 years. We said in the Lashon of the Midrash, Hashem is going to give the rebuke to each and every one of us, Lafi Mashahu, according to him. Meaning, according to who he could have been. He said, you could have been this person. Right? You just didn't use your potential. And that's going to be a tremendously shocking thing, seeing that, wow, I could have done this, I could have done that. Hashem's going to show all these tremendous accomplishments that we could have done. And that would be a tremendous busha. It's also another maisa. It's also Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal. Says once there was in America, this former boxer. And he wasn't from at all, but he had a son that was became from. So his son, being yeshiva, whatever, he started learning Gemara. So he'd sit down and learn Gemara. So one day, his father comes up to him and is looking. He says, what are you doing? What are you doing exactly? So he says, I'm learning. What are you learning? He says, I'm learning Talmud. He says, Talmud? Oh, very interesting. So he says, you think you can teach me, Talmud? So he says, Abba, you know, with all due respect, I mean, you know nothing. You know, you grew up totally fried. You don't know, because you know how to read the Aleph Beis, it's a far cry from Aleph Beis and learning a Black Gemara. So it reminds me of a Maisa, that's what Rav Leff likes to tell. So when he was, I think he was a Bachur at the time, in Miami, years ago, he was once sitting and learning the Shul and the Gemara, and this fellow comes up to him and is looking at him, staring at him. So Rav looks up and he says, "Yeah, what can I help you?" So he says, "No, I'm just curious. What are you learning exactly?" So he says, "I'm learning. It's called Talmud. Talmud." He says, "Talmud. Wow." He says, "That's amazing. You can read these words, and understand it." Says, "Yeah, whatever." So he says, "Wow, boy, I wish I could do that." So Rav Leff says, "No, you could maybe do that too. What's the big deal?" "Nah," he says, "you know, I'm 35 years old. When I'm going to start learning now, I can't do that." So Rav Leff says to the guy, says, "Listen," he says, "Rabbi Akiva started when he was 40 years old." So the guy says back to him, "Ah," he says, "Europe was different." Okay, anyways, so back to our mice at hand. So this boxer Tuntur says, "I want to, you know, learn. So he goes, "Ah." So he says, "No, I really want to learn." He says, "Okay, so if you really want to learn, Dad, I'll teach you." So he starts Aleph Beis, gets him reading a little bit, and then slowly but surely, you know, it's a long, long road. Eventually got him into the learning a little bit, starts off with the Gemara, whatever. They worked and worked and worked, and they finished one blot Gemara, one page of Gemara in a year. It took a whole year to finish this one page of Gemara. So they're coming close to the last line, and the father says, "Oh, I'm so excited. My first page of Gemara I'm going to finish. This is unbelievable." He says, "I want to make a siyum like you've never seen. You know, fleishiks, everything." So the son turns to him, "Siyum?" He says, "Yeah, I'm almost finished on a blot Gemara, page of Gemara." So he says, "Dad, you don't make a siyum on one page of Gemara. You see all these other pages you have to finish, like, you know, 50, 60, 70 pages before you make a siyum. You finish a masechet. You don't make a siyum on one page." He goes, "No way, I've been working a whole year on this. I'm going to see you." He says, "Dad, you know, because they're back and forth." So he says, "Okay, Dad, I'll tell you what." He says, I'll ask Rav Moshe Feinstein. Right? If he says we can make a see him on a payment, if not, not. Okay? He says, "Fine, go ask Rav Moshe." So he goes to ask Rav Moshe. He says, "Rav Moshe, he tells me the whole story. My father's been learning with me. And finally, after a year, we finished one page of Gemara. And my father wants to make a see you. It's ridiculous, no?" Rav Moshe says, "No." He says, "You mean you can make a see him? Because 100%. Not only that, he says, I'll come to your see you." So, wow. So he comes home, tells his father. His father's so excited. They make the siyum, whatever. Sure enough, Rav Moshe comes. Yeah, big party. Everything's fine. So the siyum's over. And that night, the father was nifter. So Rav Moshe came to the, it was to be masbid him at the Levaya the next day. And in his Levaya, he said the following. He says, "Yesh kona olamo b'sha'achas." That's a Gemara, right? That some people, they're kona, they're olam haba in just one moment. They do one tremendous mitzvah or whatever, and that they kona olam haba. So he says, "Yesh kona olamo b'sha'achas, v'yesh kona olamo b'dafachas." And some people are kona in one with one daf. And this person, he was kona the Gemara in his olam haba, which is one daf of Gemara. Right? In other words, that's it. Olam haba, one daf Gemara. Yeah, like we said, the Kodesh Baruch Hu expects from each individual only what he expects from each individual. He knew that the maximum this guy could do is learn one daf Gemara based on his background and everything else. And he did it. He put his effort into whatever, and he maximized his potential. Took a whole year, whatever, and that was very hard for whatever. What another person might be expected to finish all of Shas, or a few times, finish Shas a few times, right? That's his maximum potential. If he can finish Shas in five times, he finishes it four times. It's he didn't fulfill what he could have done. Hashem is going to have tithes against him. This guy, all he could do is one blood, but he did it. He did what he can maximum what he could do. And therefore, he was kohen olam haba with that. Another idea, perhaps, of also Beis Halevi mentions this one. What's the idea of the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us a mussar, everyone, the fi mashahu, we said, according to him, that Hashem is going to take all our terutzim, all our excuses, and why we didn't do this and we didn't do that. And we're going to have a whole ton, you know, bag full of excuses when we get to the next world. But Akash Baruch is going to take them and show them that these are not excuses, and he's going to prove that they're not excuses, because he's going to show us that when it came to other things, he's going to show us a contradiction in our terms, as we'll explain. Agav reminds me of Maisa with the excuses. So there was Maisa with Rav Shachs itself. So once, he was very, very old, his old age, and it was very difficult for him to, you know, especially in the summer months, it was very hot. So one day it was a real, real scorcher. And as it happened, there was no air conditioning in the yeshiva. And so the people were worried about his health. So they told him, you know, maybe the Rav, you know, instead of coming into the yeshiva today to speak and learning with the Bacharim, maybe you should stay here at home with the air conditioning on, because it's very hot. And again, he was very old and fragile, and go to the yeshiva, the heat, and there's no air conditioning there. He said, maybe you should just stay home today in the air conditioning and learn at home. So he said, okay, I hear, and he agreed. So then came Seder time, whatever, and who walks into the Beis Midrash? Rav Shach, in the middle of the heat, he, you know, makes his way to the Beis Midrash and starts learning with the boys and this, talking and learning, whatever. Anyway, Seder is over, so they came to him, and they said, what's going on? You know, we approached you with this idea, it's very difficult for you, you know, in the heat and this, and we said you should stay in your air-conditioned home, and you agreed. So, well, what's going on? So he says, you know what? He says, you're right. When you came to me with, you know, this idea, you were very logical. You know, after all, I am an old man. It's very difficult for me. It's very hot, whatever. And it's, you know, much more comfortable here. I agreed. But then I said, I got to thinking. I said, you know, what's going to be after 120 years when I go in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? And he's going to say, how come you didn't talk the learning with the Bachram that such a day? What am I going to say? Well, there's no air conditioning. He says, I thought, like, that's good. Is that going to hold any water? Right? Hashem's going to say, no air conditioning, that's it? No air conditioning, I have to have air conditioning. Ah, oh, it's hard, I said, okay, so a little bit hard, it's a little bit difficult, right? I said, that's not going to hold anyone in the next world, I'm going to get finally brush all, but it was an air conditioning. That's what I'm going to have to say to her, brush all, forget it, that's not going to buy it. So now I picked up my stuff and went in. There's a midrash in brought down, the Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi was once, he's walking along and he saw a fisherman. I was fishing, a yid was fishing. So he struck up a conversation with him. He says, what are you doing here? He says, well, you know, the whole day I stand here, catch fish, it's my parnasa and this, whatever. So he says, the whole day, that's all you do? He says, yeah, I come home, I have my son to eat, go to sleep, and that's it. So Eliyahu said to him, you know, what kind of a life is that? Where's your Torah and learning and, you know, no learn, no shiur, no chavrusa, nothing to sit here, you fish all day. So what's going to be? What are you going to answer after 120 years? So the fisherman said, that's what you're worried about. What am I going to answer? No problem. I have no problem with that. I got my answer set. I know exactly what I'm going to say after 120 years. Hashem's not going to have any tainas on me. Oh, really? You mind if I hear what you're going to say? I'm curious. So he says, sure. He says, the Rebbe Kol Shalom is going to say, of course, like you say, he's going to say, no, how come you didn't learn? How come you didn't have a chavrusa? Why did you go to shir? So what am I going to say? Hashem, you can't blame me. You created me without a seichel. I'm a simpleton without too much seichel. And so I can't learn Torah. And he's saying, you made me that way. It's not my fault. I have a very low IQ. So that's it. That's what I'm going to say. And what is Hashem going to do? I mean, you know, he has no answer to that. So that's why I'm not worried. So Eliyahu decided to, you know, change the topic a little bit, like we said before, you know, not to speak to him, to give him Musar directly, you know, change the topic a little bit. He says, you know, by the way, I was interested in how you're fishing over here. Do you mind explaining a little how you do it? He says, I don't know, I can explain it to you. It's not so, it's such a passion, you know, it's so simple, the art of fishing. Says, yeah, I'm very interested. Can you show me a little bit? Says, I'll try, but, you know, it takes its experience. Says, you know, I take these ropes, I go out and I plant this special flax that I use for these ropes, and then I take them and I harvest it, and I make these out of these flax, these long ropes, and then I have to make nets. Now, you think it's so simple to make a net. First of all, you have to know how to tie the knots and everything to make the net. And not only that, you know, also you think, okay, net, you throw it in, you take the fish out. No, it's not so simple. You see, because the holes have to be the exact right size. If the holes are too big, then of course the fish are going to swim right through the holes. And if it's too tiny, so then it's you know, to condense, so then the fish will notice the hole, the net, and then they won't float, so they won't swim into it. So you have to be exactly the right size, and on one hand, the fish don't notice it so much, such they need, they don't swim right through it, and he's going on and on. So Eliyahu turned to me and said, you know, let your ears hear what your mouth is saying, right? When it comes to fishing, you know, I don't have the brains that you have, you know, when it comes to these things, right? It's unbelievable. That you have brains for. When it comes to Torah, oh, I have no brains. What am I going to do? Whatever. I'm a simpleton. I'm stupid. I don't know anything. Hashem made me this way. So it's a stira, right? Are you stupid or you're not stupid? There's a great vor from the Kutzker Rebbe on this midrash. He asked Lamaisa, he goes, what's the emes though, right? Was this guy smart or was he stupid, right? If he was really stupid, so how was he able to really, you know, make the nets and know all these things? And Elamai, he was smart. So if he was smart, he says, so then how could he fool himself that, you know, think that he was stupid? So Kutzker Rebbe says a gavaltic for it. He says, Lamai said this guy was stupid. He was stupid. So how could he, you know, make the net? So he says the reason why he was able to fish like this was because he knew that his life depended on it. Right? That was his livelihood. Right? He's got to do it. If he doesn't, you know, make these nets or whatever and catch these fish, he's not going to have food on the table. So he knew his life depended on it. Even as stupid as he was able to make the nets and be a good fisherman. Right? So the lesson is, you know, people, I cannot Torah, I don't have the head for Torah, this and that. Why? Because you don't feel, Kehem Chayinu, or Chiyameinu. You felt that this was really your life, so then you could do it, you would do it, you'd find the way. Anyways, but the point we want to bring out from this Medrash, the Beis Halevi says, we see that's the type of tochacha, one of the types of tochacha Hashem's going to give us after 120 years. He's going to say, oh, I'm stupid, I can't, you have all kinds of excuses. Hashem's going to point to us and say, oh yeah, you're stupid, how come you could do this, how come you do that? You weren't stupid when it came to that, and you weren't dumb when it came to that. That was okay. Right? That's going to be the rebuke that Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give us. You know, a person says, well, I didn't have time to, you know, for the different things in Yiddish. I didn't have time for this. Hashem said, you didn't have time. Oh, you had plenty of time when it came to sitting and talking to so-and-so on the phone for an hour, and plenty of time when it came to watching your whatever on your computer, and you had plenty of time for this, plenty of time for that. You know, or Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to say, how come you didn't cry when it... cry for the base of Migdash. It says, oh, cry, Hashem, you know, you made me very, you know, cold, and I don't cry easy. You know that. You made me that way, you know, as we're going to say. Someone says, oh, yeah, you're very cold. How come when you read this novel, you started crying, this fiction novel, you know, the made-up story, when you're fairly finished that, your tears are coming down your eyes. So that, you're very sensitive, and when it comes to others, what's important, the base of Migdash, that's you don't have. Right, these are these. A person says, "I don't have. Why don't you give staka?" I can barely make a living. I give staka. How can I give staka? Shem said, "Yeah, you didn't have money. Yeah, well, when it came to go to here, you had money. When it came to buy nice clothing, you had money. And you had nice food, a nice house, a nice car. You had money for all these things, and you had money for right. But when it comes to ruchnius things, all of a sudden, I have no money. Right? That's the tochacha that Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give. Right? The fi mashahu." Right, what the send right back in the person's face all his terutzim, all his answers, all his excuses. Kodesh Baruch Hu throw. Yeah, oh yeah. That's exactly happened with the brothers of Yosef. Right, same thing. Right, oh, our poor father and this. How could we do this to him? How could you do this to him, etc. Then Yosef says, oh yeah, and Yosef, how come our father's still alive? According to your description, right, our father shouldn't be alive anymore, right? Why? Because you didn't care so much about me, right? And then so he's going to throw back in our faces, you know, what what we felt about other people, all our excuses are going to come back at us. And lastly, one more idea of Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give us back, as we said, every person according to him. Another possibility is that the person himself, he is going to koveya, he's going to set what is going to be his reward, right? The reward in the next world, as we said, how Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give a person's reward according to the way he sets it. What's the idea? So it's a maisa. His father was at home, and his son comes home from yeshiva, and he heard that his son was missing in the afternoon. So he says to the woman, where were you this afternoon? I heard you weren't in yeshiva. So he says, yeah, well, I heard there's this big sale on coats in a certain area, so I, at the lunchtime, I hopped on the bus, and I went, and I bought these number of coats, and I figured I'll take them, and I'll sell them to other boys, and I'll make myself a profit, and then that's what I was doing this afternoon. So the father said, you know what? He says, you've just answered me a problem I always had. He says, what? He says, it says that the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't pay for mitzvahs in this world, right? Schar mitzvah b'hai al malekah. There's no reward for mitzvahs. And yet, we have another chazal that says that the Rishayim, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, pays them in this world with physical things. He gives them a nice house, a nice car, whatever, pays them in this world so as that he'll eat up all his reward in this world and he won't have any reward in the next world. So it's a contradiction, right? There's no reward in this world, yet the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives reward in this world to the Rishayim, gives them all their, so they lose the reward in the next world. So what's Pshat? He says, you've answered me that. What? That this idea that a person is, he is Kovei, he sets what is reward. In other words, he said to his son, what do I see from what you just did? You just showed that 5 hours of learning Torah is worth what? 100 shekels of profit. You'd sell the coats, whatever, make yourself 100 shekels, 200 shekels, whatever. Okay? So what did you just show by missing 5 hours of learning and going and selling these coats and making yourself 100 or 200 shekels? You just showed that in your books, right, 5 hours of learning is worth 200 shekels. So therefore, if a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to pay you for 5 hours of learning, which is schar, which is unsurmountable schar, we can't even fathom it, Kodesh Baruch Hu will say, yeah, but I'm paying you according to the scale you set. And you yourself showed that 5 hours of learning is 200 shekels. Shem will give you, make you fine 200 shekel. Bill lying around there, I just paid you for your 5 hours of learning. And we don't have anything to say. We say, well, that's not fair. We're supposed to get this endless amount of reward. Shem is going to say, I wanted to give it to you. You yourself said it. You yourself showed that that's what it's worth. That's what you yourself showed it's worth. So why should I, you know, Hashem is giving you what you said. There's a maisa with a famous story. Bring this out, it's really sharp. There's once a chassid, he went to his Rebbe and he needed a bracha for parnasa. So his Rebbe gave him 100 shekels or whatever, and he says, go to the market, and he says, the first business deal that comes your way, take it, and you'll see bracha. He says, okay. He leaves the Rebbe, he doesn't understand but okay, he sits down there in the market, and he doesn't know what to do now. He's like, 100 shekels, now what? So he's sitting there. A few guys come up, these businessmen, and they're joking around. And they come up to him and say, hey, what do you have to sell? I don't see anything. Where's your wares? He says, I don't really have anything. You don't have anything to sell? You want to buy something? What? He says, I don't know. So one of them decides to pull a joke on him and says, I'll tell you what. You want to buy something? I have something you might want to buy. He says, what? He says, I'm selling my Olam Haba. Selling Olam Haba, he says, yeah, well, he says, I'll have 100 shekels. No problem, I'll give you a discount. 100 shekels, I'll sell you my Olam Haba. And their friends are all snickering and laughing. And he's remembering what the Rebbe said, first business deal, you got to take it. So he says, okay, fine, I'll take it. So they're laughing, they take out a shtar, they have Adim there, they write, I sell you my Olam Haba, and they sign it, and that, whatever. And he gives them the 100 shekels, and he takes the shtar, and that's that. So they're laughing, wow, we're a fast one on this guy, he got his 100 shekel, he sold his Olam Haba, they're having a good time with it. And meanwhile, this chassid gets home and tells the story. He says, you know, Rebbe gave me 100 shekels to do with business deal, I sold this, and I bought this guy's Olam Haba. His wife said, you idiot, that's what you did with your 100 shekels? What are you doing to star this bomb's Olam Haba? What use is this? He says, I don't know, he says, I just did what the Rebbe told me to do. Okay, meanwhile, the businessman gets home. And he says, tells himself to his wife, says, oh, I got to tell you a story that happened today. You're going to love this one. This is great. He says, there's this guy sitting there. I asked him about business, no deal, whatever. And I sold him my Olam Haba for 100 shekels. Can you imagine me 100 shekels my Olam Haba? His wife's looking up, this stern look on her face. He says, what's wrong? You're not laughing. I sold him my Olam Haba. She says, you sold your Olam Haba? I want to get. Let's go to the Rabbanut. Finish. I'm not going to live with a guy who doesn't have an Olam Haba. He says, what are you talking about? Is this a joke? Is it, what, did you said that you wrote a contract? He goes, yeah, new, and contract's a contract. You just sold your Olam Haba. I'm not living with a person who doesn't have an Olam Haba. Forget it. So he says, no, please, this. He says, then go back to him and buy it back. So he says, okay. So he runs and he tries to find him. Anyway, he finds out where this Jew lives eventually. Comes to him and he says, hi, you remember me? He goes, yeah, of course I remember you. You're the one I bought the Olam Haba. He goes, yeah. Well, anyways, listen, it was a joke and this and that. I want to buy it back, okay? Here's 100 shekels. I'm giving you 100 shekels back and I give my Olam Haba back. So he says, no, I'm not interested in selling it back. He says, what do you mean? You have to sell it back. Okay, here, 200 shekels. Here, 200. I'll give you double your money back. Here, please, just give me a Olam Haba. I can't. My wife and this, Shalom Bayit. No, I'm not interested. So what do you mean you're not interested? My wife's going to kill me, please. She's going to divorce me. You have to. Play. 500 shekels. Just give me my Olam Haba back. No, sorry. So he says, oh, no. So he says, so how much do you want? So he says, how much do I want? I want $1 million. He goes, what? $1 million? Are you crazy? $1 million? Forget it. Okay. So no. So he leaves $1 million. He's nuts. He goes home. Then tells his wife, she says, did you get your Olam Haba back? No, that guy's nuts. He wants $1 million for my Olam Haba. Forget it. No. He says, let's go to the Rabbanu. Divorce. That's it. He goes, what are you talking about? Anyways, so he goes back. It's ridiculous. $1 million. Not fair. It's not fair. He paid me 100 shekels. I have to pay him $1 million. Anyway, so we're going to the Rav. So they take him to a Din Torah, and the Rav paskins in favor of the Yid. He says, you have to pay him $1 million. So he says, where is that? That's not fair. So he says, it's very fair. Why? It's the four we said, right? When you sold your Olam Haba for 100 shekels, what were you saying in that? Your Olam Haba is worth 100 shekels, right? So you took 100 shekels for your Olam Haba. That's all it was worth. So since a person sets what is, you know, mitzvahs and Olam Haba's worth. So that's what you said. You said Olam Haba worth $100. Okay, so therefore, that's what it's worth, and therefore it was a good deal. When you sold it to him, now you want to buy it back, so him, Olam Haba, is not such a simple thing. For him, it's worth $1 million. So therefore, that's what it's worth. Olam Haba's worth every person what he says. And therefore, for him, it was worth $1 million. So therefore, you have to pay him $1 million. That's this idea. So that's the Tochach HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give, also after 120 years, is that, again, he's going to be punished and rewarded lafi mashahu, according to each person, meaning, according to each person, the way he sets his what his schar is going to be. Right? The way he values his mitzvahs, and what he does, and what, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks, hey, what you could have done at this time, instead you decide to do something else, it shows what's more important to you. This is more important to you, that's more important. The Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to reward each person according to how he sets it.